Hey, folks. Do not adjust your podcast. This is Aaron Banks on The Kira Banks Show. As many of you know, Kira Banks and I, we actually operate this show together. I produce it, and she is the person that you see behind the camera and the brains behind the entire operation, of course. But for those you don't know, Dr. Banks is my partner. We work in collaboration for many things. We have spent a lot of 2025 thinking about and witnessing the changes that are happening, but even before then, the changes that have been happening in DEI specifically. And we have a lot of conversations in the house about what's going on and realize that many of you all don't get to hear about what we're thinking about or what she's thinking about with regards to changes in government and policy and the world in general. So we thought we'd bring some of these conversations to you, some more current news and some other events. And so more recently, we've noticed what's happening in America, and more specifically, what we would call the attack on knowledge that's happening, the attack on academia and academic institutions, and thought that we'd have a brief conversation about that because I don't really know. She's been paying more attention, and I think it's great that we have somebody here who is in academia and who knows about those things and has so many intelligent and useful opinions. So thanks for sharing your opinion today. Thanks.
Yeah, no, thanks for being willing to do this with me. I know there are lots of times where you hear me just talk and have my hot takes in the house.
And talk.
And, you know, it's interesting because I actually don't like coming on the podcast and like blasting with every news headline and giving my opinion. But there's actually this thread that I want to talk about that I want to pull on a bit because I really feel like there's a common thread across a few different areas that really does, like you said, essentially equate to an attack on knowledge. Like if you're a person who likes to know things or learn things, whether formally K through 12, higher ed, or even informally, like on YouTube, at the library, at the museum, like to look up history and understand archives and what happened, that is going to be limited. That's going to change fundamentally. It's going to shift. It is shifting as we speak. And I have a lot of opinions about that. It gets me worked up. And so, yeah, I want to talk about this piece about like access to knowledge being limited. And I think in some ways, history being rewritten. So I was thinking about a couple areas, higher ed, K through 12 with the Department of Ed, libraries, museums, and archives, and all of that. Some of the ways in which DEI gets woven in.
Okay, and it's specifically those four areas that you're seeing changes currently. Why are those important right now?
Because the ground is shifting underneath those areas right now.
Okay,
I think that there are policies that are being attempted to put in place or executive orders that are not yet laws, but some organizations are complying in advance that are shifting what we know and what we all have come to understand as higher ed or K through 12 or the museums or the libraries we go to or the archives that we can rely on being there to tell us what happened, even if they are not, you know, even if they're sealed for 50 years. And then there's this overarching kind of attack on DEI and like misconstruing really of what it is.
Right. It's more of the same. I mean, the name has changed. It's the same play. It's the same play in the playbook, but just giving it a new name sort of too.
I don't think so. I think the language around DEI currently as is being put forward by the administration is a misconception. They're talking about it as if DEI equals affirmative action.
Okay.
They're talking about going back to a merit-based time as if DEI meant put people in place that are not meritorious.
Well, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here. Okay. You said that you want to speak about that a little bit later. Is that right?
Yeah. So I want to talk a bit about what's happening in higher ed because there's a number of pressures that are pushing on higher ed. So I'm sure people have heard about some of what's happening in Columbia. What's been in the news most recently
is
the graduate student Mahmoud Khalil, who is a green card holder.
Legitimate green card holder.
He was a leader in the protest against what was happening in Gaza, against Israel's actions against Gaza last year. And, you know, there were a number of college campuses who had protests.
Right.
And he was snatched up by ICE and is being detained. His wife is 8 months pregnant, right? So people have heard a lot about
That's right. Yeah.
that is egregious. We should be concerned about the fact that like legitimate green card holders are being detained.
Right. Rights are being violated. Speech being curtailed.
Absolutely.
And if nothing else, we can always apply the same rule and just think for reciprocity's sake what that means. Even if you don't agree politically with everything that he might have stood for, if it can happen to him, it can happen to you. That's at least that's how I think about it.
Right. And we could have a whole conversation about it, but I think it's ridiculous that we should be pushing for persecution of people for expressing their First Amendment rights. People can have an opinion about what Israel is doing in Gaza and not be snatched up.
Right.
So there's whole layers that we could peel back the onion in terms of what's happening in Colombia with the persecution of people who protested last year.
Right.
What I think is important for people to realize is that our government has sent a letter to Colombia because they have basically seized, that's dramatic, but they have stopped and taken $400 million of funding, federal mm-hmm. grants. And they have basically said, we'll give you back this $400 million in federal funding if you do a series of things. And those series of things really do make the government mm-hmm. have more power than it ever has over a university in terms of departments. So it wants the Department of Middle East Studies to be in receivership. It wants all the disciplinary process that a university has where there's a committee of people who look and see what mm-hmm. should the disciplinary action be. That committee right. usually is shared governance. That's what we call in the academy. We talk about shared governance.
Sure.
So that all the power doesn't sit in one place.
Yeah.
And this letter,
the federal government wants to be able to have this.
The federal government wants to say this disciplinary action sits with the president. And my
read
of it,
the college.
So my read of the letter, it says president. I think it means the president of the college. Other people have said the president is trying to take the power. So let me just
capital P president, or what are we doing? Lower P.
I don't know.
It's an important distinction. That's
it is important.
That's what I'm
but
trying to
But again, these are letters that are being leaked, and this is real time. So my reading of it was that it's the president of the university, and the president of the university is currently an interim president. And so there's a lot of pressure saying like that this one person should decide everything. We should not have the shared governance and disciplinary action. This one department should be monitored. Mm-hmm. The Department of Middle East Studies was not a big player in the protests, but because it is a department that studies that region of the world, they want it to be monitored and be under receivership. So in academia, like a psychology department, my department mm-hmm. is chaired by a psychologist.
Right.
If we were to not be able to govern ourselves, the dean would get someone else. We'd be in receivership. The dean would take it back.
That's the actual word I was going to use. It sounds like receivership.
It is. They say that. Okay. Yeah. The dean would take it over and someone else would lead it. So it's basically assuming that the department can't lead itself.
Exactly.
For no other reason but that
they
study.
So it needs custodial control.
But for no other reason that they study the area of the world that's
right.
the focus of these protests. So it's ridiculous. They talk about admissions. So they want to have a say over how admissions happen.
Okay.
And there was one other piece. My point being, universities have their own structure. Mm-hmm. They have values. They have missions.
That are not all the same.
That are not all the same.
Because they can do that.
Because they have the purview to do that.
Right.
And if Colombia folds and says, yes, we want our $400 million back, we will do all these things, it sets an awful precedence.
It sets a bitch-ass precedence, if you ask me.
That it does. They have basically folded.
Just my opinion.
That is one way to say it. There's some other framings that I could think of. That with Washington University in St. Louis and Vanderbilt coming out with statements basically saying they're going to do all they can do to comply with the executive orders
and
the current executive branch.
Yeah.
And Johns Hopkins losing $800 million in federal funds and announcing that they will have to cut 2,000 jobs. I don't think people really understand. Universities have a lot of work to do. They're overpriced. They often are not the best neighbors that they should be.
We understand this.
However, if the government is able to bully these private institutions in this way,
right.
it's the end of higher education as we know it. That's why I said it's going to shift and change. If we then have to function as a university to make sure everything we're doing agrees with what the federal government says.
Right.
That's going to shift our curriculum. That's going to shift our research. That's going to shift the questions that we're able to ask. It might even shift the students that we are able to serve. So I know it sounds dramatic, but it is dramatic.
But it makes sense.
Yeah.
What do you think that we need to be doing? Or, you know, there's a lot of different people that have different skills and talents. And some of us are like me a lot of times where I'm like, okay, there's a lot happening right now. I voted, made my choice. I've represented in that way. And a lot of this stuff feels like it's out of reach of my control. So aside from that, what do people need to be doing?
Contact the college that you graduated from. If you didn't finish at an institution, took any classes, gave any money to an institution of higher education, contact them and let them know how you feel. Let them know where you stand and that you hope that they don't comply in advance. Or you hope, right? And I get, again, the reason why this is not dramatic is if Johns Hopkins fires 2,000 people and loses $800 million, it will change the landscape of that area.
Right.
It will
outside of the actual school itself.
Exactly.
Right.
So someone who might work in the grants office or be on the janitorial staff, they won't need all those offices because they won't have the money to be doing the research.
Right.
At Johns Hopkins, some of those research units are completely grant-based funded. We call it soft money, 100% soft money. But because it's such an engine, it's gotten grants for however many years,
right,
they don't worry about their money.
Sure.
They're worried about their money now, as they should be.
800 milli.
Right? And so I just want to say, this isn't like, if some people are like, oh, you know, because colleges, they're so elite. They're like, what do they call us? Liberal bastions of whatever. Mm-hmm.
Maybe not so much if they're allowed to. Executive branch is allowed to do what they're doing now.
Yeah, they'll shift.
Right.
And so, you know, are there things higher ed could have done better before now? Sure, absolutely. But is what is happening and the impact it'll have on the students, the faculty, the staff, the community where our institution sits, right, is that reasonable? I don't think so. So that's what's happening in the higher ed world.
Wow. So that's a lot with higher ed. And I think the second one you mentioned was K through 12. What's going on in that space that we should know about?
There's so much. I generally want to say that there's lots happening at the federal level to basically neutering, like, gut the Department of Education. But what concerns me the most that I think is not talked about as much is that there is a lawsuit being brought by 17 states. Mm-hmm. To basically say that they no longer, to try to make it so that they no longer have to abide by 504 plans or meet 504 plans.
So
504
what
plans?
Are 504 plans for people that don't know?
Right. So 504 plans are those plans that are put in place to support kids with different learning needs, mm-hmm, right? So you might know someone who has ADHD and they need maybe like a behavior chart to help them stay on task.
Right.
Or there might be a kid who has dyslexia who needs different supports. Maybe mm-hmm. they need to hear things auditorially and not just writing it and written, right? Different modalities of learning.
Sure.
Or there might be a kid who's autistic who is in the mainstream classroom, but maybe needs a support person that's there also with him.
It sounds like that might be, does that have anything to do with IEP plans? Is that the same?
No, that's not the same. They're separate.
Okay.
And I don't know all the details about like what makes them different. Often they go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. I think the difference with the 504 is it's specifically for kids who have disabilities.
Okay.
So under the Disabilities Act, that's where we see the 504 plan.
Okay.
So the problem there is that that's going to decrease access. So kids who have disabilities,
which we all know somebody in our own household or in our neighborhood or in our community, we all know many people.
Right. And maybe even you yourself were a kid who had a disability, who could have used accommodations. If states no longer have to meet those needs, we'll be going back again. We will see a time where kids won't have access to education. So it's not that kids aren't capable of being educated. Mm-hmm. They simply need accommodations. And so this is where, like, you might see me getting worked up, because this is, to me, this is, it's egregious. It's disgusting, because we know that with accommodations, children can learn, but we're saying that we shouldn't have to give them accommodations. So it's saying, well, we want to go back to one size fits all. And if it doesn't fit you, that's your problem,
right,
rather than our problem. And so these are fundamental questions about, like, whose children are these? Who are we out to serve as a state? Are we out to serve only the privileged kids who fit this cookie cutter? Or are we out to serve all children?
Well, when you make decisions like they're making, it's kind of hard to argue that we're not.
That we're not what?
That we're not only serving a certain type of child, and that right. we're not interested in supporting more children, all the children.
And yeah. that's what's sad to me, is that it's so blatant right. and so clear. And so if you live in one of those 17 states, and I live in Missouri, so I am one of those
I'm
states.
I'm sure it is. I didn't go, it was Missouri. We already know. They're right next to Florida, but that's a whole nother thing.
Right. Write to your attorney general, write to everyone right. you can mm-hmm. to say we should not be a part of this lawsuit.
Well, anything else on K-12 that we need to know, or things, actions that we might need to take? That's helpful. That's informative.
There's so much, and there are other people who know this sphere better than I. So I just encourage you to keep reading in terms of the Department of Education.
Okay.
I think we need to be mindful of how it's being gutted and how it's being neutered. But this is where, like, understanding what's happening on your local and state level is also really essential.
Right. These are going to be state issues, definitely.
Yes. So, and that's honestly, that's how some people who are pro the gutting are saying, like, oh, you'll have more control at the state level. But again, I live in Missouri, and we have, since the beginning of our statehood, never prioritized public education. And so what this means is that people with the means will probably send their kids to private school or choose to homeschool them.
Right.
And so
which
then,
happens. This yeah. is what happens.
And so then it's like every person for themselves, rather than we want a populace that is educated. So that, to me, that's the biggest thread that I want us to understand, that these topics are woven together mm-hmm. to create a populace that is not educated. We don't want people going to college, because you learn things, you learn history and stuff, right. you get woke, and you understand that we have structural racism.
Yeah.
And the thing about higher ed is, like, we teach students, but we don't ever tell them what to do with that information. But this government doesn't want them to even know the information. We yeah. got K-12. Well, that decreases the chance that they will go to higher ed if we don't give kids access to K-12. And then only the ones who will have the money to get their kids properly educated, to be competitive for the
right.
for the smaller number of colleges that will be able to live through what's happening. Right?
So what are you reading? Where are you going for information? You were saying people need to keep up with the information, the things that are happening. You have any suggestions on how they do that? Because a lot of people just don't know where to look, because I'll be honest, mainstream media is mostly trash. That's my opinion. And so I don't consume a lot of it, or I have to watch what I hear. Where are you going?
So I want to push back a bit.
Oh, on me?
Yes.
Okay.
So mainstream media is trash. Yes. And we still need to consume
imagine that,
it.
Getting pushed back on.
Go for ahead. Me.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I think that that's what this administration wants us to deduce, that what's being said is trash and lies. And so either we give up, or, you know, we don't believe any of it. And so I think
I'm not even saying trash, like it's lies, like it's all being corrupted. It's uh-huh. just the way it's presented, and it's the choice of what is being presented. And
so that, I think, is us making sure that we are critical consumers.
Right.
We have to have media literacy. So mm-hmm. I watched how the different news sources covered the student protests last year,
right,
and was sorely disappointed in pretty much every major media and newspaper that we have. Like, no one was willing to call a thing a thing.
Right.
Right. So no one was willing to talk about it being genocide. Everyone wanted to, people didn't want to understand the history of Palestinians and that mm-hmm. land. So it was very narrow. We weren't willing to look at nuance.
Sure.
I think that shifted some with time when it got a little bit safer to talk about the nuances and to not just conflate Jewishness with the Zionist policies of Netanyahu, right? Mm-hmm. People were just crumbling it all together. And like, if you question anything, you were anti-Semitic,
right?
Right. But like Jewish Voices for Peace is an organization that's a lot of Jewish folks that I know are connected to that organization. And so for some folks who know that, will know that it's a pretty progressive Jewish group in the sense that, that's when I first learned actually about the pro-Palestinian movement was mm-hmm. from Jews who were part of that. I digress because you asked where I was getting my news.
Right.
So I'm getting my news from lots of different places and then being a critical consumer. So I will still read things. I'll read things from the Times. I will watch clips from Fox. Mm-hmm. I will watch things from Al Jazeera. So I also try to go global, mm-hmm. BBC, and see how different places are covering what's happening.
Yeah.
The Washington Post sometimes.
Are you sure about that?
Well, I'm just being critical because Bezos.
I'm gonna zoom in on your face. You said that when I call back and do this.
Because Bezos has basically said, like, you know, we're going to cover things the way we're going to cover them.
Right.
And so I do. It's kind of like Fox in the sense that I want to know what people are hearing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I throw up a little bit in my mouth when I see the framing.
It's always good to hear the dissent.
It is. But here's the other thing I've been doing a lot of. C-SPAN.
Yes. We watched a bit of C-SPAN.
And you watch it on YouTube and mm-hmm. I watch it on TikTok.
Yep.
And we sometimes watch it together. But I say that because people like TikTok has its own problems, but I've watched more C-SPAN on TikTok mm-hmm. than I have watched C-SPAN, period. Right. Like it's pulled me into C-SPAN more and now I will sit and watch it on YouTube more.
Yeah. Well, I like it because it is free of all the color commentary. So I think like what you're saying is I like being able to hear information, especially in the beginning, process it and think for myself.
Absolutely. I like it without all the commentary. So like the whole Zelensky, Trump Vance conversation, mm-hmm. I heard about it,
yep.
but I was like, let me watch this on C-SPAN first. Let me watch this actually happen first myself, like you said, and then get all the commentary. And for people to like put this in context and help me understand like the layers of this right. and what it meant.
When you have time, it's also sometimes very slow moving and I don't always have time to do it, but the TikTok clips and the YouTube clips help a bit.
They do. The other thing, there are people I follow on TikTok that are experts in these different areas.
Okay. Dropping any names today?
Oh gosh, you're testing me. I'm not ready for that. Yeah. So yeah, just following different folks. Under the Desk News. I'm a fan. Mm,
that's right. You like that one a lot. Yeah, you sure do.
I'm a fan.
Show do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You've also mentioned something, I guess, about libraries. You said public libraries, or what were you saying? There's some things that are happening in that space as well. Or?
Yeah. So there's been some moves to defund libraries and museums, and the archives, the National Archives, has been defunded, and there's been some, like, again, some gutting of staff. Firing of key folks. And I really
They're
want people
so good at defunding. They're so it's, you know, they like to defund certain things more than others.
They're saving money, right? That's what Doge is saying they're doing.
So you were saying libraries.
Yeah. So there's
museums.
Yeah. So there's a push to defund
National Archives.
Yes. Yes.
Really?
So that would be a problem because the National Archives,
it's probably a big resource suck, I would imagine. Right. I mean, it's probably high on the list.
Of what? High on the list of
inefficient.
Why are you saying that?
I'm just saying that's. I'm just trying.
Devil doesn't need advocates.
Okay. I'm just trying to make sense of it all. That's all.
But that doesn't make sense.
No. Okay. Well, make it make sense. Maybe. I've been confused a lot lately.
What?
I'm just looking for something to make sense.
Well, it doesn't make sense.
Okay. All right.
It doesn't because we need the archives. We need to know what happened. Like I said, even if it gets sealed,
I'll sip my tea.
Even if it gets sealed for 50 years, we need to know what happened.
I would think so. As a person who, thinks history is important. I don't know. I got nothing. So what's going on?
Yeah. Just the fact that we're talking about defunding these spaces, which again, what I want people to realize is this is about decreasing access to knowledge. They don't want us to know things. They don't want us to think. They want us to think and do what they say, which, like, if we even think, they want more haves and have nots. So don't let people be educated. We're just the unfortunate ones that have the education.
Right.
And so we're going to have to suffer through the pain of, like,
that doesn't go over well in society and history, though.
It doesn't, but they don't care. They're thinking about the now. I also think that they think that they're arrogant enough to think that they will be able to, it'll be different this time. There's been also some conversations. I didn't pull this in, but the whole eugenics conversation, the fact that Trump has been encouraging white South Africans, Afrikaans, who he is saying are discriminated against, right, to come here.
Right.
If you look at some of the genetic engineering that Musk has done with his children, there's this whole, like, I really don't know this super well, but there's a bioethicist on TikTok that I follow who, I think it's Evan, the bioethicist, who talks about the really strong kind of eugenics thread that we're seeing in some of the actions here.
Absolutely, I've noticed that.
So if we
had a dream about that,
did you?
But yeah, anyway.
So if you think about, like, so for the sake of what, like, they're saying that there's some people who are just better and there's some people who aren't, and they're just kind of, you know, making it happen faster. Because if you can't be educated and you can't access information, only if you have the money or they would say the intellect, right?
Right.
Then you'll be able to maybe navigate this narrow road to.
This is the fuck around that comes before the find out. That's all this is. That's really what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah. But I really think, again, these might feel disparate, libraries and museums and education and higher ed.
No, I see the connection. 12,
you see the connection, right?
Absolutely.
And this is where I think pulling in the DEI piece is important.
Okay.
So people see, like, DEI as a separate thing. It's actually connected here because they don't think that they're framing DEI as equaling affirmative action. Right. And they're framing affirmative action as giving people who are not competent an opportunity. Right. So they're basically arguing that white men are the ones who can do things competently.
Right.
And so we should stop these programs that try to get these other people even close to us.
Mm-hmm.
And in the executive order on ending discrimination, he talks about going back to a merit-based society.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
So that one assumes that we had a merit-based society rather than a society based on nepotism.
Right.
And privilege. I think
we're going to be going back to the 1400s, maybe.
Right.
Okay.
Which was not merit-based.
Right.
But two, that's assuming that those people that were served by DEI were not meritorious, were not capable.
Right.
So why give them resources?
Same song, yeah.
So that's why I'm saying it's not different. It's connected. And the way that they have misconstrued DEI to be these, like, handouts... there's part of me that's like, they don't understand the distinctions, but then I think they do.
And that's
and
what I was going
to
say.
Making the shorthand to get people on board with them.
I think you just need a few intelligent people somewhere at the top of the chain who have power to make some decisions to cut this off, to realize that knowledge is power and that understanding is power. And that's why, how these things are all tied together, and that understanding, our kids are coming downstairs and we're recording. Hey, what's up? You're good. Come on. But we're recording from that door over to the microwave. We'll be done in a little while. Can you what? Yeah, you can get your shoes. Where are you going?
Okay.
Oh, my son is going for a walk.
What's the weather? Chilly?
This might be on there. It's just a natural interruption.
63. It's nice outside.
Say hi to everybody, August. You want to say hi to you? Come put your head over here by me. Yeah,
no.
It's going to be. Just put your head over here and say hi, August. Here? Right here. Just right
here. By your dad.
Yeah, and the camera's on me.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. All right. Mm-mm. Spring break, y'all. Yeah, but I mean, obviously, they know what they're doing, and I think they're operating in fear, and that's why they're trying to control information and knowledge.
Absolutely. I was talking to a colleague of mine, and he was saying, he's like, remember back when Obama was president and there were the demographic projections of, like, the United States is going to be majority minority by 2050
or something like that.
And people were saying it like brand new day. Like, look, we have a black president. We're going to be, we're going to be the majority minority. Like, look at this beautiful multicultural America. And he's a historian. He was like, that gave some folks, white conservative Christian folks who wanted to go back to make America great again,
that freaked people the hell out.
Exactly.
We just in our little echo chamber thinking, oh, that's lit.
No,
that's what's up.
I knew that was going to set people off. I was like, y'all should have just kept it to yourselves.
Right. And so I guess that's also really relevant with us because the DI space is a space that we're in.
Yeah. It's interesting because what I do, DEI wasn't the label when I started doing it in 1996, right? But that is what it's called now. And it's absolutely the space that I'm in. And it makes people tentative, scared to step into that space.
I remember when you were applying to or been admitted to Mount Holyoke College. And in your description, or they had a feature on you and a few other students, and you said you wanted to be like a cross-cultural psychologist or something like
Absolutely.
That. Which is pretty dope that you have effectively grown to do that. I mean, you've matured into actually doing that. So few people in high school say that they want to do something in that way so specific and actually end up doing it to the level that you've done it. So
yeah,
pretty dope.
It is dope. And to be just a little technical, in psychology, a cross-cultural psychologist would study like across countries and from a developmental perspective mostly. So like if I were traveling between here and Nepal to look at like how children develop or something.
Right.
But there just wasn't language for what I wanted to do back then. Sure. So that was the closest I could get.
That's really cool and exciting though. Right.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. So that's what's on my brain lately. Okay. I did not feel the need to like rail about how ridiculous some of the, proclamations and EOs were in and of themselves.
Right.
But this thread around access to knowledge really gets me, it gets me burning. It gets me worked up. It gets me like angry because knowledge is power. I know it sounds dramatic.
Right.
But it is.
And then there was light.
So, yeah, I think people should think about like in these areas do you have some influence? Can you either make some calls or support a executive director or board president, like not complying in advance and maybe just keeping business as usual? And then maybe possibly speaking out against.
Right. And then possibly, this is my perspective, and maybe just the legal part coming in, is that I think a lot of people are freaking out, justifiably so, but organizations thinking about how they might actually be an injured party in a lawsuit. Because I think we're going to have to push back and let the Supreme Court, the federal courts in general, make a lot of decisions on these things. Because some of these things can be reversed and undone. But it's a longer process for that. That's where the fight is. And I think in movements, and there comes a time when you fight, you're in the streets, and these things happen also simultaneously, of course. But I think we're going to get to the part to where we're about to say, okay, what's the Supreme Court say about this? Now, depending on what they say, but what I would call simple concepts such as, which are not really simple, so concepts such as First Amendment rights.
Right.
Like it shouldn't be that. This shit is just not that hard, at least at the level that they're suppressing and the way they're trying to control things.
Except people don't want to take a stand.
Law.
But people don't want to take a stand. They don't want shots fired at them. They don't want to
be scared. You're losing money.
$800 million.
That's crazy. That's crazy. So these other institutions see that and they know, oh, they're coming for them. But I hope that they can stand up, just like you said. That's what we really need at this point in time. And they need people that are informed and educated to know, well, these are your rights, and this is what we need to do. And they need to be their own activists of sorts in their spaces that they're in.
Yeah. And know that executive orders are not laws.
They're not laws. They're not
so
laws like Congress.
So complying in advance, I think is not warranted in many spaces, mm-hmm. but preparing, right? Because here's the thing. I hear you, the kind of see you in court attitude.
Right.
There are some institutions that won't survive. So they will go under.
Right.
They might be able to see somebody in court, but they won't be a functioning university.
True.
And, you know, those...
It's sad. It's real sad.
Those with billion-dollar endowments will probably have to take the hit on their endowments. We didn't even talk about the threatened endowment tax or the indirect costs.
Do you want to talk about that? Because that's academic. That's academia too. I mean, what's...
No, I mean, I think...
Because we're going to want to know when we listen to this. It goes like, oh, well, what's up there? And if it's something happening, we should know about that.
Well, so I will say higher ed is... It sounds so dramatic to say under attack, but higher ed has a number of ways that it's being pressured by the government. And a couple of the other ways I didn't mention are the proposed tax on their endowment. So mm-hmm. currently institutions don't pay tax on their endowment.
Right.
Some do pay a state endowment tax. Don't sure. quote me on all that.
But wait, let's go back. What are endowments? Break it down to us. You've been on the board of universities before and colleges. And so,
I mean, endowments are that pocket of money that you raise so that you can then invest mm-hmm. and can generate interest so that you don't have to be totally revenue based in terms of like tuition. Right.
So it's an academic institution's rainy day fund. Sort of.
It's not so much the rainy day fund. It's more like it's an investment fund. Mm-hmm. It's a pocket of investments that allows it to generate income so that it doesn't have to say, oh my gosh, we have to get X number of students for us to run next right. year.
We call that flex money.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it matters.
It matters. Right.
It keeps you from living check to check.
It keeps you from living year to year and right. tuition dollars. It lets you be able to update your dorms or build new buildings,
right.
all sorts of things, do maintenance on buildings that exist.
And so that's being threatened to be taxed, which at whatever rate that might be is going to be...
It would be significant.
Significant.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
What else?
And then the indirect costs. So this one is a potential. It's not a done deal, but the talk is to limit the indirect costs from grants from NIH, the National Institute of Health, where a lot of mm-hmm. grants come out of, to 15%. And so let me just say what happens is...
Wait, I'm sorry, 15% of what it currently is or...
15% of a grant. So say write a grant that's $1 million grant. Mm-hmm. Depending on the foundation or the institute, they might say the grant is $1 million and the indirects have to be within that million, or mm-hmm. the grant for the research is $1 million and the indirect will be on top of that.
Okay.
Indirect costs are set by the university.
Okay.
There are some universities that are like 35% indirect costs, and that covers things like I'm doing research at my university. The university is paying for the lab, the equipment, the air conditioning and heating, the printer, right? Like the stuff, the infrastructure.
Things you might have to do.
It's more about the infrastructure.
Infrastructure. Okay.
That the university is giving you the infrastructure. So some universities charge up to 45% indirect costs.
Right. So was that 15% an actual number that somebody was giving?
Yes.
So what I'm hearing is that in some case, was there anybody who's operating? Who does that?
Nobody. 50%? Nobody. Foundations do, but NIH has never been that low. So that's another way that universities are saying if this indirect cost goes to 15%,
right.
that's like for some of them, 30% less money that they will be able to pull mm-hmm. when their people get grants. Mm. So between the money lost from indirects, the money potentially lost from the endowment tax, and now the money that's being pulled from universities that are supposedly doing research that are against the executive orders, like Correct. We've seen at Hopkins and Columbia, mm-hmm. right? And the policing around free speech on campus.
Yeah.
Higher ed is under lot
attack.
Of different... Sure. So now I'm not being dramatic.
Well, I was just... Here we are. Uh-huh. You've done a good job bringing us to just really drive your point home.
That now you feel my angst.
Right. That was a good closing. Is that the closing?
I need to close. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I appreciate you talking with me today and helping me think through some of these things. I feel like that thread analogy really fits. These are threaded together.
Yeah.
It's about knowledge. And I want everyone to have access.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot. And but we appreciate the information. And I appreciate the dialogue. Maybe we can do this again on some other topics.
Yeah.
I'm thinking. It seems like this went all right. Went all right.
let's do it.
Yeah. I think it went all right.
Yeah.
We'll see. So I guess I'll go ahead and close us out.
Okay.
Or are you closing us out? How does this work?
We can both do it and see which take you like. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on the Kira Banks Show. Oh, wait.
Wait. Okay, here's mine. All right, you ready? All right, bust this. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the conversation that we've had today on the Kira Banks Show. Be sure to follow us at all the socials on Kira Banks. Are we doing Twitter anymore? It's X.
Nope.
So be sure to follow us on all the socials. And I'm Aaron Banks, and thanks for joining me. Oh, God. Mine wasn't any good either.
Okay.
You want to go and do one?
I'll do one.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, thanks so much, Aaron. I appreciate you helping me think through these things. It helps to have someone think through them out loud.
Well, it's been great speaking with you today, Kira. And it's been great sharing the conversation with you all as well. I hope you like what you heard today. Thanks for joining us on the Kira Banks Show. Be sure to follow us at Dr. Kira Banks on all the socials.
And thank you all for joining us on the Kira Banks Show. We'll see you next time.
All right. And cut.
Have tea to spill or something you want to ask Dr. Banks? Contact her at kirabanks.com/stories or stories@raisingequity.org. Thanks for listening.